Welcome to another edition of the Cover 2 Podcast. I'm J-Mac. I'm joined by our boy Tim Kelly. We are again sans the realist. He's struggling. He's hitting pretty low.
Yeah, like two for, what is it, seven?
Six maybe? Six or seven. We're up there. We're getting up there. We're old now.
I think we've done one for every game, right? That Georgia's playing? Or did we skip the first week?
The first week.
Okay, so this is six. No, this is right. This is six.
There were technical difficulties for the first one.
Right, so he's two for six.
That's 300.
333?
Yeah, I can't do math. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
He is otherwise engaged. Hopefully one day he can join us, but Tim and I will do our best to keep you entertained, as we always do. We'll have to try to think of some new installments, new sections.
Features, right?
Yeah, to keep you coming back.
And make it easier for us so we don't have to like fill in time with senseless facts.
Such as?
That Fresno's two losses in 1991 were to Utah State and Bowling Green.
It's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, 10-2. They couldn't cap it off at California Bowl is what they lost it to, the Bowling Green game, 28-21.
That's unfortunate.
Could have finished 11-1.
They played in the California Bowl in 89 as well.
They did, you're right, to Ball State. They beat Ball State that year. They actually played in 88. They were California Bowl favorites.
There's like an 11-year pattern.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to discuss a few things today. We're going to talk a bit about the game that shall not be mentioned that would happen last week for Georgia, the loss to Vanderbilt of all teams. But all in all, before we get into that, I thought Georgia played well in that game, just not well enough to win, which is sad. We'll revisit Cherushinsky Gate. It's a couple weeks old. We are going to we'll have an exclusive interview with the Tent City, I guess, I don't want to say creator of Cherushinsky's, because the good folks at Georgia Sports Blog officially created them based on the idea from Warren St. John. But
just sort of like, was it Marco Polo who brought spaghetti back to wasn't it like supposedly Chinese? So she's like Marco Polo brought it back to Italy, and then they kind of claimed it as their own.
Yeah.
So Mamie Hartman is the Marco Polo of Tent City Cherushinsky's.
And you know what's really kind of bizarre is that was her nickname anyway.
That's right, I know.
But for she was actually an excellent Marco Polo player.
Oh. See, I always thought her nickname was Marco and Scott's was named Polo. And then they would go, that was like their cute little thing. They go, Marco, and they go, Polo, hee hee hee.
Yeah, I think that was it. It was also when they were lost like in like Macy's.
Yeah.
They would holler right from the dressing room and the other would say Polo. And,
yeah. Because Scott wanders a lot.
He does. Aimlessly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we lose him for this lengthy period of time at tailgates.
We actually this year we decided to just get a long rope at tailgate, know where he is. Like if he starts getting too far away, you kind of get a tug, you know, and you got to reel him back in.
We have him tethered to the area.
Yeah.
I mean, we tried the putting that electric fence up, but that didn't work out either. He would black out for large periods of time.
Right, yeah, I know.
Which was just as bad as him wandering off for large portions
of
the day.
It was incredibly hilarious, but mostly I just didn't like it because I had to clean up his vomit after he hit the fence.
Well, it was kind of cruel, but I guess we kind of like that kind of.
Well, maybe we'll plug it in for the Georgia Tech game.
just for fun.
Yeah.
We'll discuss a few other things. We'll do our picks. We got a couple other random topics that we'll discuss, but we'll try to get Ms. Hartman here on the phone. We told her we'd give her a call, so in our incredibly scientific methods, let's see if this works out again. We only have the best technology here at the Cover 2, so.
Hello.
Mames!
What's going on, Johnny?
Nothing much. You and you're here with me and Tim and.
Seriously, I'm here too. Good lord.
I mean, and Mr. Kelly.
Thank you.
My boy Tim Kelly.
Okay.
Our boy Tim Kelly.
Yeah, exactly. You got to share the love. It's not just you. It's our.
It's collective. It's right. Collective.
Are you using Scott's intro this week?
Try to edit it in. If it doesn't work out, then we'll have to come back and do it again. But it was very your husband's a very talented man with the whole editing and audio and video aspect. So
He is. I don't think we would have got the satellite off the ground without him. But you know, now we set it up and. What was Lost Week's record? Like 57 seconds, I think?
Yeah, it was definitely sub-minute.
It's astonishing.
Wow.
We're going sub-30 second by next year.
it's a challenge. Mames, we're gonna discuss. You know, we had Matt Tavrog on last week talking about Cheryshinsky Gates, and he was the principal player in that. But you, as Tim just described, you sort of brought Cheryshinsky's to us. Tell us a bit about where you uncovered the recipe, where you decide what prompted you to bring it to Tent City this year.
Well, I did. I did introduce the now much maligned Cheryshinsky to Tent City. This summer, I read Warren St. John's book, Rammer, Jammer, Yellowhammer, which I highly recommend you all read. It's a very good read. Gets you really fired up about football and really makes you want to buy an RV, as Tim and I have been discussing this season.
Are you getting royalties from either from Warren St. John or from, like, RVs Unlimited?
No, but if they want to give me an endorsement, and I'll talk about their RVs in exchange for driving one to every game with a big ad plastered on the side. But
I was gonna say, because nearly a conversation goes by these days without you mentioning Warren St. John's name or an RV.
I'm telling you, it's a good book. So anyway, you wanted to know where I got the idea.
Yes,
I got it from there, and I believe their recipe was pouring out just half of the cherry juice and filling it with golden grain, maybe some bourbon, but I was like, you know what? Why waste something as tasty as bourbon? So I went straight for the grain alcohol, drained out all of the cherry juice. I just made a batch this last week, actually, and I looked at my fridge, and it's safe to say that half of them are probably gone.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of despair following the Vanderbilt game. We really, we wanted to, I guess, not officially drown our sorrows, more like a munch on alcohol-soaked goodness our sorrows away.
Right, right. And I was discussing with our boy Tim Kelly with his wife this week, Carrie, who's the official Tent City bartender, the possibility of making a Cheryshinsky themed drink, mixing in maybe some Sprite with a little bit of the Cheryshinsky sauce, and calling it a farewell to Cheryshinsky's arm. So a little play on a farewell to arm.
I like that. That's clever. It's is there going to be flame?
Diminishing, and we still have an entire jar of juice left. So
is there going to be flame involved? Forever. I mean, I really think that we should try to get some sort of, burning visual effect to the next Cheryshinsky beverage.
Yeah. Lindsay actually tried to light a Cheryshinsky on fire a couple weeks ago. I don't think it worked very well. I think it was a little bit too wet or something. But I was kind of surprised it didn't burst into flame. But yeah, we've definitely talked about that. A sort of, pyrotechnic display. But you never know. We're going to have the fire pit this week, so we might have to roast a few Cheryshinskys over the fire and see what happens.
I've always thought that our tailgate was missing highly flammable liquids next to open flame.
And pyrotechnic displays?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
All right, well, tell your wife to smuggle in some firecrackers from South Carolina.
Okay, yeah, I will, definitely.
We'll definitely attract the cops this week, if we didn't last week.
All the eyes will be on Tent City now, particularly when we start.
Yeah, there's been much debate over the fire pit this week, so, I don't know, Jonathan's against it, other people are for it. We'll just have to maybe play it by ear and see what the consensus is on Saturday.
Well, the funny thing was that when Tim arrived at my house, I said, Tim, now what side of the fire pit camp are you on? And he had the perfect John McCain / Barack Obama, I'm bipartisan answer. I see both sides of the story. I don't really want to come down either for or against the fire pit.
I'm riding the fire pit fence here.
And for the record, I'm not anti-fire pit. I just don't want to...
Oh, now you were spewing out some anti-fire pit venom here earlier.
Hey, Jonathan, what if we built a fire in your grill? Then we still have the fire, but it's just kind of, disguised as a grill.
This is when that might, because then it'd be dual purpose. We could cook, but these are all issues we'll sort out over probably 847 emails over the next two or three days. So now Mames, there has been some criticism of the Cheryshinsky as of late, and since the debate has started over it, Georgia has lost two in a row, most notably to Vanderbilt, which hasn't happened since 1994. Where do you come down? Do you think we need to change the name, maybe mess with the recipe, abandon it altogether? What's your take on this?
Well, I don't think we should abandon it altogether, because I still have about 2 pounds of cherries marinating in my fridge that I really don't want to sit there until, you know, like next year. So I'm definitely for bringing them and getting rid of them. I don't know, maybe we need to rename them, like, you know, Stafford throws a cherry bomb. I don't know.
Stafford cherries?
I think we need to incorporate the two of the blackberries into the mix. But, you know, no matter what they're named, I think they're popular. I think people like them or maybe love to hate them. So I don't know. I think people would be sad if the cherry shampoos went away. And there's some people at our tailgate that eat them voluntarily and actually sort of, which is kind of frightening. So,
well, I
don't know. I say for now they're here to stay.
This most recent batch was pretty potent. I've got to say there was, when all of us had the first one, on Saturday, there was some audible coughing and gasping after the wood in our mouth.
It was. And I used the same recipe as last week, and I use that term loosely, but as the last time I made them. But I think that I only made them on Wednesday, and so I think they didn't have enough time to kind of marinate and sort of mellow out, I guess. But the other ones had been marinating for a couple weeks before football season started, so... So, I don't know, maybe they'll taste better this week. Who knows?
All right.
Well, I, for one, love the evil voodoo nectar of the Cherishinsky that has single-handedly destroyed our season, maybe. Thank you.
Hey, they were 5-0 before Tennessee, so they haven't produced a losing season yet, but we'll see. I don't know if we'll be taking him down to Jacksonville. Maybe we'll leave him that week.
I think you should just play it safe on that regard. Perhaps you should... you know, you could soak apples in like rum or something, and maybe name something after Trey Battle getting burned in the secondary. I'm not really sure. So
just as a warning to everyone, I think the longer the Cherishinsky remains around, the less of a stigma herring salad has. So
I know there, you know, Cherishinsky's, I think, are right up there with herring salad and the tailgate food that everyone loves to hate. So, you know, it's a contest. What can we think of next? But I don't know. Maybe if something happens and I don't know, we pull out another loss this week, maybe we might have to throw the Cherishinsky's on the fire pit and have a little ceremonial burning. But
all right.
But we'll see.
Well, Mames, we you know, last week when we interviewed Matt, he closed out the interview by asking us a question. Is there a game you're interested in our take on? Is there a question you've been dying to ask Tim and I?
Let me think about that. Very
profound.
Rutgers. What's your opinion on Rutgers?
Tim, I'll let you feel this one first. We actually were discussing this before you called.
On Rutgers? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, Rutgers. Yeah, big game against Pitt this week. Johnny's on, you know, he's on the Rutgers bandwagon this year. I, for one, think that they're going to get stomped by Dave Wannstedt and his gigantic mustache.
I called them to go unbeaten last week. I am sticking by that. I think they'll beat Pittsburgh. I might be a little bold in suggesting they can beat Louisville and West Virginia, but
whoa.
I'm just putting that out. I am on the Rutgers bandwagon. If Rutgers goes unbeaten and does not play for the BCS title, it'll be a crime, and I will be sleeping in front of the White House until we have a BCS playoff. I will reverse my stance on bowls.
That, Johnny.
All right. Well, good.
Well, we're looking forward to your hospitality this weekend, and we can't wait to come over to your house and stay up and, you know, play PlayStation while Julie like falls asleep at 10 o'clock or, you know, something like that.
It'll be a good time, and we're looking forward to having you here. And Mames, perhaps, you know, we can do a live podcast with you joining us in person as we wallow in misery after Mississippi State beats us 47-7.
47-7. That's your prediction. All right. I'm
going to
remember that.
Okay. Well, Mames, on behalf of Tim, we thank you for joining us, and tell your husband hello and tell him that we're going to try to edit in that thing. Perhaps it's already edited in and this conversation is moot, but who knows?
All right.
Well, Mames.
Right. I will listen in eagerly tomorrow and see what you come up with.
All right, Mames. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Alrighty. See you guys later.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.
So Mames defending the Cherishinsky there, Tim. What do you think of that?
Well, that was good. I mean, I see your point as the concoctor of the much maligned herring salad at last year's Sugar Bowl. I brought.
Now you got to tell us a bit about, because the average listener doesn't really know.
That's true.
This.
Yeah, herring salad was it's a sort of family recipe, I suppose. And my grandmother used to make it every New Year's Eve and said it was good luck for the rest of the year. And I loved it. You know, I never really knew what was in it, you know, but I just got it every year, and it was sort of like, you know, a holiday treat. And so I guess it was the Capital One Bowl a couple years ago against Purdue. I decided to whip up a batch of good luck herring salad for the bowl game. So when I asked my mom how to make it, it was revealed to me that it's pickled herring. Actually, it's pickled. I think it's herring in wine sauce. You can find it like in.
Yes, I've seen that.
Okay, a little bit of mayonnaise and hard-boiled egg, and a jar of pickled beets, and you crumple it all up. You know, you kind of mix it all together, and you put it into a food processor and make it into like a paste almost. And you put it on crackers, and I, for one, think it's just fantastic. Anyway, I brought it to the Sugar Bowl last year. I force-fed it to, among others, John Hart, Lindsay. They almost vomited. Actually, I don't think Lindsay ever ate it, or John Hart. One of those didn't eat it, which I blame the loss on them for not eating it.
Not so much the actual presence of the herring salad.
No, if everyone ate it, we would have won. Yeah.
I would have at least tried it because it sounds so incredibly repulsive that I would be fascinated by it. In fact, it's something that I probably would have paid people to eat. So had I been there, I would have been handing out, you know, dollar bills to people to encourage them to eat it.
I believe the mayor, Matt Tavrog, and a friend of ours, Chris Hauk, are the only two people that I've ever known that would eat it voluntarily. I don't think Matt loves it or anything, but I think he'll eat it, and it's just fine with him.
That's the mark of a true friend right there.
I know. I love it, and my whole family loves it. We eat it. Like, Carrie will test. Come New Year's Eve, or usually the holiday season now, we don't confine it to New Year's Eve because it's too good. You can't just have it one day of the year.
Sure.
So we eat it all the time, and it repulses Carrie to no end, and, you know, but it's great fun.
Is this like tradition in Maryland? I mean, is it like when you're born that they, like you know, some people slap the baby on the butt when it's born, but they actually jam a spoonful of herring salad in your mouth when you come out of the womb?
It's not really a Maryland thing. I think it's my grandmother's, who was from New York, and I think her family's German, so I think it might be either a German or New York thing.
Germanic. There we go. That explains a lot.
So, yeah, well, I think it goes deeper than just Maryland. I don't know anybody in Maryland who ate it. I don't really know anybody who ate it. Probably a lot of people are scared by the recipe.
Well, I mean, pickled herring usually frightens people off. You know, when I was in high school, I was at Westside in Augusta, and we were playing a game.
Against the pickled herrings of Northlake?
Well, that was my junior year. This is my sophomore year.
Okay.
We were playing a game against Screven County, and we decided, since we all had just gotten our licenses, that we needed a road trip. So we got parents or somebody, one of my friend's mom's van, all loaded in there, and I decided that we needed to have tailgate food, so, you know, we got the chicken and everything. Prior to going down with Zahn, a good friend of mine, he and I made a spam cake where we got the average yellow cake mix and replaced the water that's supposed to go in there with milk blended with spam. And then
the grossest story I've ever heard in my life.
We prepared it and then put chocolate icing on it so you look at it and it looked like a regular cake. And brought it down there. And I remember my friend Charles actually sat in the back of the van and proceeded to eat the cake while the rest of us were around hollering at him, "That's disgusting." It was more of a comical reason that we made it. And he proceeded to eat probably half the spam cake.
Half of the cake?
Yeah. He probably had some issues following that, but...
Well, and I mean, now with, you know, the advent of the Cherishinsky also being bad luck, and with this story, herring salad is, I think, is off the hook. I think we can officially take herring salad off the hook, which is great news for everyone at our tailgate and for surrounding tailgates at whatever possible bowl game, if we actually are lucky enough to go to one. Now and in forever in the future.
Well, I'm even.
It will be at every bowl game.
I'm even going to go as far as forget the bowl game. This is the last home game until Tech. I'm going to issue a challenge. I know you're.
I can't. Not for herring salad.
Do you want to break? Because I know you're busy. And
it's only a New Year's thing. All right, okay. It's got to be around New Year's.
Okay. Well, we'll wait till then. I for one am eagerly anticipating when we go to Shreveport and eat a herring salad. Yeah. I'd rather have it in Boise because I think that's a staple. I think you eat. You know, potatoes.
They got a lot of herring up there in Boise?
Well, potatoes and herring salad.
Okay.
We have proceeded to devote 20 minutes to discussing nonsensical things, so we're going to actually try to accomplish a few things here with the remainder of our podcast. A couple of random categories I'd like for us to discuss here. Tim and I were talking about this earlier, and this is something that Kyle at dogsports.com talks about a good bit, but it's five teams you'd like to see Georgia play in the future that we don't normally play now. You know, Georgia's been trying to, with Damon Evans, the athletic director, trying to bulk up their non-conference schedule from not just Division I AA opponents or UAB here and there, but try to bring in some quality teams. I know they're working to bring Oregon in, and they've, I think, signed a deal with Louisville, if I'm correct, or not entirely sure.
I thought it was Cincinnati.
Might have been Cincinnati. One of those pulled out of it, and then they played Colorado this year, which is a Big 12 school. So who are five teams, Tim, that you would like to see Georgia schedule to play in the future?
Well, I had fun with those two games we had against Clemson. I think that would be nice to just keep that going at least fairly regularly. I know it's not always smart to have, you know, like these two big tough rivalry games bookending your season or whatever, but I thought it was fun. You know, it's good. It seems logical. So that's one. Florida State, I think, would be fun.
Yeah.
I know this is not helping the regional, you know, Georgia, a more national team, but I think those two, I guess, you know, in the Southeast, I think those make the most sense logically. Notre Dame, I would like to see them play Notre Dame just because I'm a Notre Dame fan. And I think that, I mean, well, it's going to be hard to get more national exposure than.
Well, it's Notre Dame. You play them in South Bend, you're on NBC, and everybody
exactly.
sees you.
Then I would say, you know, we'd like to play maybe one of those Big Ten teams. I don't really care who it is because all the Big Ten teams are the same to me.
Purdue, Ohio State,
whatever, same thing. They're all just a bunch of teams that play for, like, you know, wood axes every single game. It doesn't matter who they play. You know, it's like this is the first time, you know, Ohio State's ever played, you know, Sam Houston State, but it's for the, you know, the old oaken, you know, bucket, you know. So some Big Ten team. And then I guess, you know, I'd have to say Florida International, so I'd see if we'd start a brawl with them too.
Which would be entertaining. And you know, I watched part of the brawl. Florida International can scrap. They don't go toe-to-toe with Miami.
Obviously, Miami's guys had to take off their equipment and start beating Florida International over the head with it just to win.
They had to wield them as weapons.
Yeah, which begs the question, which player on our team do you think is most likely to take off his helmet and use it as a skull-bashing weapon in a brawl?
You know, for some reason, I really think that Blake Barnes isn't right. I think
something's wrong.
I think
you think something would happen finally. All his years on the sidelines, he just takes the clip, snaps it in half, and then uses it as some sort of throat-slitting device.
I think so. I think there's something. I think there's a little bit of crazy gene in him, and I think if something happens, he might hurt somebody. Or honestly, Daniel Inman, that he isn't really needed.
Oh, right.
Daniel Inman is he's a good old boy who, when push comes to shove, he's going to hurt you if he has to. So Barnes. It's one of the quiet guys. You wouldn't expect him just to go nuts and, you know, then chase. So I might go Blake Barnes.
Okay.
Well, those are interesting picks there. I do like the Florida International edition. I think I would. I'd probably say. I've always had a thing for Penn State. I've always had an irrational love. I discussed that earlier. So I'd say Penn State possibly, because of the Sugar Bowl a couple years back. I'd probably say Notre Dame as well. I would definitely agree with you in that one, because again, you play the Irish, you're gonna be on national TV, and you know, and they're the pinnacle of college football history. Let's see. Texas would be fun because that was, you know, the 83 game is pretty etched into Georgia fans' memory. I think any Pac-10 school is going to be fun because that's going to, if you do a home and home series, it'd be pretty fun for Georgia fans to travel out to any place on the West Coast, whether it's Washington or UCLA.
Just make it when I have where I can fly out there.
So that's four. And then my other one, I would say North Carolina, because we discussed this earlier. I think it'd be really fun to go to Chapel Hill. I think it's a similar. Not a similar tailgating atmosphere, but the two towns are so much alike, and I think it'd be fun to go up there and play against North Carolina. So, another random one. I don't know if we did this or not. I think, did we do the college football team and player you have an irrational dislike of? Have we done that already?
I think we did.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll modify that slightly. Who is the worst college football coach you've ever seen?
I've ever seen.
It's tough. And there are a handful out there now, which probably could really meet the bar.
Yeah, I mean, the first one that just off the top of my head, after just watching a few games, is Les Miles. I think Les Miles is a moron. And, I mean, I can't, right at the top of my head, I can't think of the individual plays. I remember watching Tennessee, I think, last year when they blew that lead at Tennessee. There was a couple bonehead plays. And, I mean, I don't know. Our game, at the SEC Championship, we came out to play, and we blew him off the field so early. Mm-hmm. There wasn't too many chances for him to mess things up. But that's one guy off the top of my head I think is an idiot. I don't know. Give me a couple seconds while you might.
All right. Well, I was going to put out there John L. Smith.
Because, oh, right. Yeah, John L. Smith.
I mean, man. I mean, I think a team of untrained monkeys could do a better job than John L. Smith. I mean,
right.
There's no way, there's no excuse for them to lose Notre Dame this year. I mean, Notre Dame was obviously the better football team, but when you get up that big on them, they went from being an aggressive team to a completely passive team. It's sort of like he coaches just the first half, and then he wanders around aimlessly, much how Scott does at our
right.
random times. So John L. Smith is sort of the parallel, the college football coaching parallel of Scott Hartman, I would say.
Okay, right.
But yeah, that's pretty bad. I'd be tempted to say Larry Coker, but more of a discipline reason.
Yeah.
Because the thing that bugged me most about about Miami, particularly the Louisville game, and I think I talked about this in an earlier podcast, is how he allowed the coaches to lead the players to the logo of Louisville and then encourage them to stomp on it.
Yeah.
And the coaches were the one doing it. And I would think that's the exact opposite. The coach should be the one in control while not escalating situations which don't need to happen. So.
Yeah.
But well, you can, if you think of a random coach later on, you can talk about
it. I'll just randomly scream it out in the middle of a very coherent, complete thought.
Good. I'm bet.
Then all of a sudden I'll go, Ron Zook! You know. Just...
Well, typically how most of our conversations are anyway.
So. Yeah, and then I'll black out.
For about 25 minutes.
Yeah.
It's a good time. I guess we could talk about the state of Georgia football, but there's been a lot written on that, so we really don't have much to add. The Realist offered, I think we discussed earlier, a very angry post earlier, which, you know, in his mind, it was completely, completely understandable. He was very frustrated, and for those of you who do not know The Realist, he's very passionate about his Georgia football. He gets into the game, so the emotion definitely overcame him, and he had a day to think about it, posted again, saying the rage had subsided, I believe, and put together some very important and very, I think, good thoughts on the way the season was going. I offered some, and pretty much I'm a broken record now. I keep saying the team is inexperienced. We should have known this was coming. We've been kind of spoiled the past couple of years, but going 8-4 this year is not necessarily a bad thing. Of course,
no, I don't think so.
It's gone. Have three very tough games against Florida, Auburn, and Tech coming up. And Kentucky, if they play like they did the past couple of weeks.
Excluding LSU, they got smoked.
Yeah. Well, Kentucky, I mean, their offense is not bad, so. But, Tim, quick thoughts. Don't want to dwell too much on it, but what are you thinking about the state of the program right now? Or
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm definitely probably somewhere in the middle, much like my position on fire pits. My position with Georgia falls somewhere in the middle between The Realist and J-Mac. You know, I'm not quite, I don't know, as optimistic about every facet of the game as you talked about in your posts. But I'm also, there was definitely times immediately after the game where I was thinking like The Realist, just like everybody else was.
Mm.
I
mean,
just,
oh, yeah.
You were just spouting off all your hatred about everything, and, you know, we all said a lot of things we didn't mean, and, you know, I told your wife that, you know, she was, well, we don't want to really get into that, but, no, I'm just kidding.
So you sort of had the Ike Turner approach to...
Right, yeah.
Okay.
I hit her because I love her, you know? That's how I feel about Georgia. No, but, I don't think we need to start firing everybody or, mm-hmm. But I do agree with the change of the quarterbacks of Tereshinsky to Stafford. You know, and I don't know, you know, we don't see him enough in practice. We don't know exactly what's going on. But, I mean, just like Rick said, it's obviously not working.
Mm-hmm.
Terashinsky's 0-3 when he starts in the SEC. And I mean, no matter what other excuses you have, drop passes, the interceptions weren't his fault, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. He didn't have the playbook open up for him. Well, you know, he still lost those games.
Yeah.
And I think that just, it does a lot just the psyche of the team and even however small it might be, just to give him that spark. And I do think, you know, those guys see it just like we do. Stafford obviously has more athletic ability than Terashinsky. And with, I think, a lot of guys, they'll have more confidence no matter how smart or how, you know, experienced Terashinsky might be. I think a lot of guys just get in that huddle and they want to be with the guy that has more playmaking ability.
Well, and that breeds confidence. I mean, his mental aspect's gonna develop over time, and I think him getting a few starts now is definitely gonna bring that upon it. Particularly, he's gonna go right up against Florida, Auburn, and Tech, and that's gonna really bring a lot out of him. He might go 0-3 against them, but I mean, those are gonna be experiences he can build on. But I mean, you could look. I mean, the pass that Milner dropped in the end zone, it was a tough pass to catch, and it was really good coverage, actually, by the Vanderbilt defender. But, I mean, that was about as perfect of a pass as you could throw under that situation. It was low. It was away from the defender.
Yeah.
It had good velocity, but just enough touch. And I really think that that was the best game that Stafford has played all year. I mean, yeah. He was 9 of 13, probably should have been 11 or 12 of 13.
Absolutely.
And he looked a whole lot more comfortable because there were times, I mean, he played solid against South Carolina, but there were times against UAB and Ole Miss and the other games where he definitely looked like he was a freshman. He had tons of talent, but he was struggling to comprehend the speed of the game, the playbook, and I think that was pretty obvious. Do you think it's weird that he plays a little more in the shotgun than other? I mean, Terashinsky, they line up in the eye and they have a single receiver, but that might be, I don't know if that's trusting his athletic ability over his mental ability yet, or...
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to give him more time just in case. I have no idea.
Well, he's definitely got the arm to do it, so...
Yeah.
Overall, we, you know, it's not good losing to Vanderbilt, but, you know, every once in a while these things happen. How did Vanderbilt do in 1994, Tim? Do we know?
Well, they went on to lose, I know, a heartbreaker to Tennessee at the end of the year. It really came down to the wire. They lost 65-0.
Yeah, that was a close one.
But they did beat Northern Illinois by a point.
That was good.
They beat Kentucky by 18. Lost to South Carolina, also lost to Florida. They finished 5-6. They didn't go to a bowl game. So I don't know what that tells you.
Well, that was good. That was a Zaire senior season?
No.
94? Yeah, 94 was, because I believe somebody has a shirt which reads "The Season of Desire."
I know who that person is. Yeah, me. So, yeah, it was Zaire's senior season.
All right.
Yeah.
And Georgia was what in 94?
They were 6-4-1.
You know what's amazing to me is a 6-4-1 record from an SEC team. They did not go to a bowl that year.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that happening now with, what, 6 or 7 guaranteed slots almost?
I think we have 8 guaranteed slots.
I mean, if you just have a .500 record, you're going to go to a bowl game at the SEC.
That's what I'm making on this year.
One more win, fellas. One more win. And, you know, I for one, before we move on to our picks real quick, I for one am okay kind of going to a random mid-level bowl. Like, it's not the Peach Bowl. Because if they're playing honestly in Boise, you know, well, it may be tiresome for Georgia Tech fans. It'd be kind of random. I mean, there'd definitely be some good stories to say from traveling to Boise. There'd be plenty of tickets for it.
Yeah, I don't think we're lined up for any Boise appearances. I guess our only options would be Shreveport, Memphis, Nashville, Dallas, Atlanta, Orlando, Tampa, and New Orleans. Those are the 8. Those are the 8 guaranteed SEC teams. Yeah,
and you got to think. Even if Georgia goes 6-6, Auburn, then Arkansas, Florida, LSU, Tennessee, that's 5 right there. Bama will get 1.
Bama.
I mean, Georgia just goes 500. They have 1 of
South Carolina.
South Carolina, probably. So, yeah.
Possibly Kentucky.
I just don't think Kentucky can go 500 this year.
They could.
All right. Could be wrong. I would like to see a random. I don't want any Oahu Bowl trips because even though it's Hawaii, I just don't think the average Georgia fan can, myself included, can go out there.
No, I know. I think, you know, if we're, it's a little early to getting into bowl conversations. You know, so many things can change. But that didn't stop me on the blog today from talking about it. It's just interesting to talk about, I guess. You know, but if we do, if we're, you know, strong enough to pull off one of these wins, maybe two of the wins mm-hmm. of the, against, you know, these big three. And then, you know, that's just crazy. But we would want to hope that if the SEC gets two BCS bowl teams in, because that knocks everybody else up. So we would want maybe Auburn to close out on, you know, undefeated, go to a national championship or something, or we get two at-larges.
So. Well, I think if you rule out the SECs, which, I mean, it's going to be hard for Georgia to they're going to need a lot of help to reach that. But if you look, and let's say you have Florida playing either, I guess Auburn, we'll say, if Arkansas stumbles down the way and Florida Auburn play, if the loser of that game won't go to the BCS, the winner will go, and Tennessee wins out, Tennessee will probably get a bid because there'll be one loss, and they might get the at-large bid because they added the game this year.
Yeah,
so.
Right.
That'll probably help the SEC. Then Georgia could bump up. I'd love for Georgia to go to the Cotton Bowl. I think that'd be kind of
fun. That'd be fun.
So,
all right, we got to motor through these picks.
I will. My last real quick story involving bowl games is that on my honeymoon we were in San Francisco and the Seattle Bowl was being played. Not the Seattle, the San Francisco Bowl.
Oh, okay.
We were in San Francisco.
Yeah, was Technic? Did they go to that one?
No, they've been there a good number of times. Can we find out who was playing in the? I'll pick ahead of time here for our first game. You do a little research and see who was playing possibly in the San Francisco Bowl. I don't think it was Tech in 2001.
Yeah, that was they were in the Seattle Bowl.
It was close, very close. So we'll start with it. While Tim looks up our game, our bowl possibilities here. The first game we'll start outside of the SEC is in the Big Ten, Iowa and Michigan, and I just don't see Michigan losing until they play Ohio State. They're too talented on both sides of the ball. Their defense is pretty impressive right now. So I think Michigan wins pretty easy. I think Iowa's been a little overrated. I think they kind of got exposed against Ohio State, and I just don't see them having any chance against a similar team like Michigan.
Iowa's coming off that tough loss. I'll go with Michigan, even though, again, I don't really care about the Big Ten.
A lot of running the ball.
Yeah.
A lot of running
the ball. I don't know. It was boring. I don't like the teams.
Is there no...
No. Was sponsored by somebody? That's the problem I'm trying to find here out. But keep on going.
All right. Well, I'm not sure. I could have sworn it was San Francisco Bowl. Because the Seattle Bowl was the Oahu Bowl. And then it became...
Exactly right, yeah.
It hadn't going to have lasted too long. It had to have been one of the brand new bowls, too. Okay, outside of that, Texas and Nebraska, which Nebraska is still kind of playing much better than last year. They're making progress under Bill Callahan, but I think Texas, the Ohio State shellacking was a wake-up for them. They've looked pretty good the past few weeks. They struggled a bit in the early going against Baylor. It might be the MPC Computers Bowl. What does that say?
That's in Boise.
Ooh, I'm horribly wrong on that one. It's Blue AstroTurf, though. Texas, Nebraska, though. I'm going to go. Nebraska's playing better, but I think the Longhorns. I think Colt McCoy is finally settling into that system, and they're starting to utilize their skill players pretty well. So I'm going to go with Texas in that one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Texas too. I think Nebraska's still maybe a couple years away if they're ever going to be. I don't think they're ever going to be what they were before.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to stick with Texas.
All right. Let's see. My team, Rutgers. Rutgers. We already sort of talked about this one. You were a Pittsburgh fan.
Yeah, I'm all about Pittsburgh. That the testosterone that exudes from Wonsatt's mustache will be too much for Rutgers to handle.
All right. Well, I'm gonna stick with Rutgers in this one. Unbeaten season. I'm calling it now. So when all the people start hopping on the bandwagon down the road when the BCS is handing out their picks, let people know I said Rutgers should play for the national title if they're unbeaten. Okay, staying outside the SEC, Clemson Tech is the big game. Game day going to be there. I can't think of the last time that Clemson Tech was a marquee game.
Right, I know. I think CBS Sportsline or somebody had it as like one of the top five can't miss games of the year.
That's just terrible.
Of the rest of the year, can't miss games. Yeah, I know. I think Clemson is, you know, they're trucking along pretty good there, and they have some really good skill players. They, you know, those running backs, especially that. That's C.J. Spiller going on with in tandem with is it Davis? James Davis.
James, it's an incredibly common name. It's either White or Davis.
Yeah. Well,
we're going to look at that. Tells you how much of we know about college football. It's really kind of tragic that you're listening to us for your insight.
They're not. I don't think they really are listening for insight. I'm going to say Clemson in this one. Tech really isn't anything. I mean, they lost to Notre Dame in a first game of the year when anything can happen. And outside of that, I mean, like Virginia Tech, I think they're down. And then what's their other marquee win? You know, anybody? Maryland, I guess, which I can't cut down my own state.
But. No.
Yeah, I'll go with Clemson.
They'll shoot you for that in Maryland.
They will. Yeah, it is. It's a state ordinance.
Yeah, I'm going to go Clemson, too. I mean, Tech's defense is pretty solid, but Reggie Ball, to me, is still Reggie Ball. Calvin Johnson may be one of the best two receivers in the country, but, you know, I just don't foresee them being able to match up with Clemson. The Clemson's running game is doing so well, and their defense has played pretty solid football as of late. They struggled a bit against Wake Forest, but Wake's been playing pretty good ball, so I'm going to go with Clemson in this game. And then we'll dive in the SEC. Ole Miss and Arkansas, which is sort of a kind of not a joke to pick. Arkansas is really kind of turning it up a notch, and Ole Miss is, you know, aside from almost beating Georgia,
and really almost beating Alabama in overtime. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. This could be a trap game. I think everyone's jumping on the Arkansas, you know, bandwagon a little bit too early. I think they're still on somewhat shaky ground with Mitch Mustaine at quarterback. I mean, yeah, he's obviously very talented, but I wouldn't be anointing them as, you know, as SEC champions or, you know, mm-hmm. biggest, you know, surprise of the year quite yet. I watch out for Ole Miss, but I'm still going to say Arkansas.
Well, and there's a good chance Arkansas is looking ahead toward those Tennessee and LSU games. I still don't think Ole Miss can match up with them if McFadden and the rest of the running backs are going and they can run for 300 yards against that defense. So, because they can't have Patrick Willis play every single position on the defense for Ole Miss. So I'll pick Arkansas that game. Then the annual Tennessee-Alabama showdown, which Bama's playing better, but they struggled against Ole Miss. They haven't looked too impressive this year to me. And Tennessee, after shellacking Georgia a few weeks ago, has probably impressed me the most out of course, you know, I say they impressed me the most, but I was really high on Florida last week, and then they went and got dominated by Auburn in the second half. So it shows you how much I know.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, you don't know anything, so.
I know, I didn't even know. It's James Davis at Clemson, by the way.
That's what I said.
I know, I was wrong. I thought it was White. I'm terribly wrong.
James White, I think he was my old music teacher.
Was he?
Yeah, that's probably what you were thinking of.
He taught you to play the recorder, didn't he?
No, God, no. The trombone. Anyway, Alabama, I would say, you know, they're always, you know, good for some whack upset, I think, every year. And I know they haven't been playing very well. Their offense looks pretty stagnant. And Tennessee had a week off to prepare, and it's in Knoxville. So it's like everything tells you that it's Tennessee in this one. So that's why I'm going to say Alabama.
Man, oh, man. That's a bold move.
It is. I'm a bold guy, though.
Yeah, very much. I'm going to disagree with you entirely and pick Tennessee to win possibly by two touchdowns.
Oh, okay. That's not agreeing with me entirely at all.
I said disagreeing with you
entirely. Oh, I thought you said I'm going to agree with you entirely.
No, I disagree. Apparently, I slurred my diss.
Yes, please.
Tennessee big. That's what. Not big. Two touchdowns, but that could be big to some people. That'd be big for Georgia right now. Yeah. Speaking of Georgia, they're playing Mississippi State, the Bizarro Bulldogs. It is the matchup.
Speaking of
here.
The Mississippi State Bulldogs, did you know their mascot is named Bully, which I did not know.
It's brown.
Yes, it is. And, you know, we were on August 6th, and I think we started in 1954?
1955? Yeah, around that time.
Well, they 1939, and they're on Bully 19. And as any indication of what happened to Bully 1, I guess we know where the other 18 went. Bully 1 was hit by a bus.
Ooh.
After only, I think, not too long. I guess not even serving an entire year. So
that's unfortunate.
So we can call them, I guess, Mississippi State, the Bulldog Executioners. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how you go through 19 dogs. Well, I mean, what's the average dog expectancy for their life?
I mean, Uggas last, they're about a good 8-9 years sometimes. 10 years?
The 19 Bulldogs is a lot. We've been enjoying it in the final 2 minutes here by my wife, who decided that this is a time where she wants to go rummaging through the fridge. So,
not just any snack either. She's a going, state fair corn dog.
It's again, you never know what's going to happen when we record in my kitchen. So
I always go right into the refrigerator for any of these state fair products. their entire line of delicious snacks.
If it's some sort of frozen item on a stick, you better believe the McGinnies are going to have it in their house. It's why we have so many of those lamb things you can buy on the streets in New York City.
Oh,
I don't know what they're called. Georgia, Mississippi State. I told Mamie earlier that they were going to win 47-7. I think I was lying about that. I must have blacked out briefly. Because still, I think no matter how many struggles Georgia's going through, there is absolutely no way Mississippi State, which has the worst offense, maybe in the history of the SEC, can beat Georgia.
Okay, well, I guess now we just lost. I don't know. I guess I'm going to go with them, too. I think I said last week, I don't know what's going on with Georgia. It's so hard to pick with them now. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to say if we lose this game, then I don't know.
Book your tickets for...
Nowhere.
Yeah.
Book your tickets for home.
Yeah, because if you lose Mississippi State, you're going to have a hard time. You're going to get killed by the three biggies, and then you might lose to Kentucky.
Yeah.
Which would be really disappointing. But,
Let's not think that way.
Long haul, big picture, going to be a good team. Good recruits coming in, yeah. More experience, going to do fine. And beat Mississippi State this week. We both say it right now.
Exactly.
Went longer this week, but we rambled for a whole lot in the beginning. So we thank.
I blame Mamie.
I blame her too. But we thank her for joining us today as our interview. And on behalf of our boy Tim Kelly and my wife, who is about to warm a corn dog up.
State Fair Corn Dog.
State Fair Corn Dog. We thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you folks later.